intermarriage across race becomes an especially salient feature of a racially divided society. It becomes a very salient fact about such societies, how intermarriage is regulated. In extremely racially oppressive context, intermarriage is prohibited. In the United States, intermarriage between blacks and whites was illegal until the 1960s in parts of the country. You know, as recently as the 1960s, it was illegal for a black to marry a white. And that's because the classification system is all about biological lineage. And what intermarriage does is break down the barrier of that biological lineage. Marriage exclusions were powerfully enforced. It's also why racial mythology is deeply sexualized. It's deeply bound up with views of sexuality and sexual relations across that divide. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that people actually behaved in ways that corresponded to those racial divisions. As we know, in the slave context, in the slavery context in the United States, white slave masters, including Thomas Jefferson, had sexual relations with their slaves, although they didn't marry them in general. There are instances, it's not that it never happened, where a white slave master would free a black slave and marry her. There are cases where that did happen, very rare. What miscegenation means, of course, is breaking down the clarity of the lineage system, biological descent system. It's also the issue of intermarriage, which I think figures so centrally in the way racism works as a division within classes. Because it breaks down the ways in which intimate personal relations and kinship relations can correspond to class relations in ways that help cement solidarity. Solidarity within the working class is often greatly facilitated by the spread of the kinds of social networks bound up with kin and family that build local solidarities, which then can become broader solidarities. And when there's a deep kinship fracture within the class that corresponds to other divisions, that makes that kind of solidarity more difficult. Okay, let's look at the issue of class analysis. There are two kinds of questions. I think the most important questions are not so much about the origins of racial inequality. That's irrelevant to the study. The real questions we want to ask in our thinking about the relationship of race and class centers around how do we explain the durability of racial divisions and the difficulty in eliminating racial inequality. From the point of view of understanding the race-class connection, we're really interested in the reproduction of the inequalities and not so much the origins. The origins of racial division in the United States going back to slavery are interesting, of course, but I don't think they're as difficult a question to deal with as the problem of the reproduction. So I think there, and this then generates two kinds of questions. What are the processes which actively reproduce racial cleavages, and what are the processes that block challenges to eliminating racial cleavages? Those aren't the same question. What are the mechanisms that actively reproduce something, and what are the processes that block challenges? The central aim of class analysis is that the interactions of class and race helps to answer both of these questions. So what a class analyst would say is if we want to understand the mechanisms that actively reproduce racial cleavage, and if we want to understand the mechanisms that block challenge, if we want to understand those things in our study of race, understanding how class and race interact provides a good part of the answer. A class analysis of racial inequality attempts to show how class contributes to the reproduction of racial cleavages and how class structures in various ways block challenges to eliminating racial cleavage. One approach to this, or starting point for this question is, for these issues, is the question who benefits from racism. That was a very popular question to ask 30 years ago. You know, in the 1970s, Marxists studying race and class spent a lot of time studying that question, who benefits from racial oppression. You don't see much discussion of that sort of thing at all these days. That's completely dropped out of discussions, as far as I can tell. When you look at discussions of racial inequality and its transformation, the question of who's benefiting from racism is not at the forefront of the discussions, even by people who are sharp critics of it. In the discussion in class analysis about who benefits from racism, there were basically four types of answers. In a stylized way, this question was typically you'd have the following categories. You'd have white workers and black workers and white capitalists. You can make this more complicated by adding the middle class and the like, but mostly this discussion took place in a context where the contenders for who benefits were white capitalists, white workers, and black workers. Well, not that black workers would benefit, but they were the other category. Here are the four answers that were given typically in these discussions. White workers exploit black workers. There's actually a transfer of surplus from black workers to white workers. And this really makes white and black workers distinct classes, not just a racial division within a class. This is the strong version of the internal colonialism arguments. So the strongest version of internal colonialism sees white workers as a significant beneficiary of black exploitation. White workers and white capitalists form a racial alliance because they share common interests in the exploitation of blacks. Now, white capitalists might benefit more from that, but nevertheless, they share in the benefit of exploiting black workers. White workers would be worse off if black workers simply disappeared. So white workers benefit from the exploitation of black workers. That's one position. A second position is that white workers oppress black workers but don't exploit them. They benefit from exclusionary practices by reducing competition for jobs, for example. But they don't exploit black workers. This is what came to be known as split labor market theories. White workers would not be worse off if black workers disappeared. They would be worse off if they had to share their jobs, the jobs in the privileged part of the labor market, with blacks, if there weren't these barriers to competition. Sometimes the mechanisms that are actually involved in this kind of exclusion look racial, but they're not. For example, in certain kinds of craft unions in the building trades, the problem was nepotism. The people in the union reserved apprenticeship positions for their nephews, sons, brothers. It was entirely familial. But because of the connection between family and race, due to race being a biological lineage classification, that had the effect of excluding blacks, but it also excluded most whites. Anybody who wasn't had a kin relation to an insider couldn't get a job. So any new group of